The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Well, now we're joined for this week's Friday Forum by Rebecca Moynihan, Labour Senator, the party spokesperson on housing, Verona Murphy, Independent TD for Wexford, and Alan Farrell, Fine Gael TD for Fingal and spokesperson on climate action. We want to talk about a number of stories that have alerted us during the week. And I think we have to start with passports. Rebecca, the people looking for passports and being told, not quite this, but almost, you're a bit too stupid to fill in the form correctly. That's what your problem is.
Well, I don't think that, and I think to be fair to Simon Coveney, he said it's obviously a problem with the form, because if 40% of people are being sent back, I think that's a problem with how the system is set up and designed. I had a really good experience with passports recently, because I was so freaked out about how long they were taking. I was like, I better make sure that I apply for it. And I had a relatively quick turnaround time within 2 weeks. That said, I think there is a problem for certainly first time applications. I think we need to increase staffing within the passport office. I would also ask airlines to be flexible with people where they are travelling for emergencies and the passports have become out of date.
I don't think they can, though, under international law. You know, to let someone on a plane who has an out-of-date passport, it means they have no passport at all.
Yeah, I know of a situation where somebody, I suppose, effectively lost their passport and they were able to get onto the plane with a note from the police. So I think where there's emergency situations, I think that people need to
be flexible. I can understand that if you arrived in the airport and everyone was checked, they would leave it to the immigration people to sort out your problem if you arrived without a passport. But I'm suspicious that the airline might find itself vulnerable to a fine.
Yeah, I think under that circumstance, photo ID within the European Union is acceptable, so a driver's license as well. Where there's a fine, if an airline allows somebody on, I'm afraid I'm not sure, Pat, but certainly.
But that is the case. Are you saying that all you need is a photo ID and they can make an exception of their normal protocol?
Within the
EU. Okay, that's news. Yeah,
I'm not sure it would work in America or other places like
so,
that.
So what's the diagnosis from the Fine Gael point of view, given that Minister Simon Coveney has charge of the passport office?
Yeah, I mean, look, I can understand there's incredible frustration out there. Every constituency office, every councillor, every senator and TD in the country has been inundated with passport queries of late. It's really been happening since international travel was recommenced back in July of 2021, and primarily because for the prior 18 months, nobody was leaving the country and a lot of passports expired. And that explains the massive increase in the number of applications. We've doubled the staff in the three offices across the country in terms of passport output. We're producing 5,000 passports per day, and we're already at 80% in the end of May 2022. We're already at 80% of the output of 2021, and it's only May. So there will be a very, very significant demand.
But would you accept that the system needs to be overhauled? For example, if you're in the system and there's an error, you go back to the bottom of the queue.
That is a massive bugbear for an awful lot of people, including myself and my staff who do extraordinary work in the constituency, trying to get through the process. But yes, it is frustrating when somebody makes an error, as the Taoiseach Lily of Radcliffe outlined to us on Wednesday evening. The analogy is that there's 40% of applications going back because of an error. Therefore, 40% is far higher than you would expect in terms of human error in a report of this, or in an application of this process. And on that basis, we have to make the assessment that perhaps there's a problem with the form. So the Passport Service are looking at that. They are attempting to streamline the process as best as they can. As I said, they have more than doubled their output, and the number of staff has risen.
I mean,
by
there were things I heard, I think, on the Hard Shoulder the other day, a guy talking about the passport office wanted for their child to get a passport, their passports, the parents' passports. So they send in the parents' passports. Turns out they need, or the parents' birth certs. Turns out they need the child's birth cert as well, but that wasn't clear from the form, and the passport office acknowledged that it wasn't clear.
Every passport needs a birth certificate, but I mean, perhaps it was this section on proving identity of the parents or the nationality of the parents where the confusion arose. But every application for a passport needs a birth cert. But what I would say is, Pat, and not taking away from the frustration held across the country, but 45% of online applications are issued within 2 days. And that has to be stressed. So an online renewal that you or I or Rebecca or Verona can do, there's a decent chance, a 50-50 chance almost, that you'll get your passport within 2 days.
Verona, what's your take on this?
Well, I think Alan will appreciate a first-time application cannot be made online. And also on your programme the other morning, Pat, you would have heard somebody say that if a guard signs a form, then that guard is the only guard that can be spoken to by the passport office. I mean, it's a crazy system. It's poor management. I've been representing this issue going back as far as October, November last year. It's made our offices, we're actually inundated. It's a very cumbersome process because you're tracking an application number, which you've got to come back and correlate to the person whose passport it actually is. It's crazy. And we've been behind the curve on it. And I do feel it's poor management. I mean, we're identifying the problems all the time. It doesn't seem that we have many solutions. One such solution would be that there is a register in the Garda station, and if the name is entered and the child's name is entered, it should be sufficient to speak to whoever is in charge on the day. Like they're like blaming the people for the form application being filled in. It's a cumbersome form at the best of times, but actually blaming it, they've had years to update it, and that just hasn't happened.
The business of the guard, I mean, a guard could be off duty, a guard could be out on other police business, a guard might have been transferred, a guard might be on holidays. All of these things could delay the process. But so many people having these problems, and many of them go to their TDs, their senators, to try and get representation. Is Simon Coveney right to curb that?
No. No, he's not. I have a real problem with being told
there is an issue for me that you can get things done through your politicians that should be done by the bureaucracy properly. I have a problem with using influence, if you like, to get routine services, not exceptional services.
I don't disagree with you, Pat, but I do disagree with the policy, because for different constituencies, depending on the number of TDs or senators, for instance, you may not get the same number of queries as you might get in any other constituency. We get a kind of a steady 5 or 6 or maybe 10 a week. So we don't really come into contact with this limitation that was placed on it by the department. I disagree with it because my job is to facilitate access to public services half the time. And this is one of those times. So I'm told, oh, no, you've reached your quota, Alan. I don't think that's acceptable. I have to challenge that a bit.
You know, is that really the job of the legislator, is to facilitate people's access to services to which they are entitled?
An awful lot of the time, though, Pat, what we try and do is attempt people to get where they need to go, whether that's access to public services, whether that's a school place or whatever. Oftentimes, we as legislators have very little to do with it. But the nature of our political system is that there is an expectation, and what we do is manage that expectation. But what I would like to say, and I think it's important to point out, sometimes Oireachtas members or even councillors' offices can kind of throttle the requirement to actually go to the department in the first place by informing the constituent that there might be something that they could do themselves. So it's not always about contacting various departments or the passport office.
Rebecca.
You end up in a situation where you're helping people who, for example, if doing an online application, they don't necessarily computer literate, they're not necessarily literate. So I do think that there's an important function in what TDs...
No, but I understand that you might help them in a process that they don't understand or find cumbersome, but the idea that straight away you use the political system to get through to the minister and the minister's civil servants who then get onto the bureaucracy, that is, I mean, that would clog everything up.
I think it's less of an issue than it was previously with the passport system, because the passport system is automated. But in some cases, that can be a problem because you're told that you can't touch anything because it's now in the automated system. And so nobody can go and interfere. So I suppose it's about striking a balance between, you know, what are people's like genuine human needs and responses in an automated system.
Verona?
I have to say, like, I have had constituents come into my office and show me how many times on their phone they've called the passport office before coming to me. Yesterday, a constituent arrived with 111 times she had tried to phone for her daughter's passport. Like, this is symptomatic. What we're seeing in the passport office, to my mind and to many people's minds, is symptomatic of how we've allowed departments of health and housing to get out of sync. We have huge problems in other departments. This is the big, this could have been nipped in the bud last October, November. Instead, we're in the height of the season and it's building and building to the point of collapse.
Now, in fairness, we'd have Eoin Corrie on, and Eoin Corrie would be warning people as the pandemic eased, saying, check your passport. He was doing it. Maybe the passport office needed to do their own advertising campaign.
But this equally, one, Pat, they're saying to people, you know, it takes 8 weeks to turn a passport around. It takes 10 weeks. It takes 40 days for an FTA. None of those timelines are being met. So people are impression that if they've applied for their passport within the time frame of which they need it, that it's going to be actually published to them or printed to them. That's not the case.
Yeah. Some of the texts coming in, a lot of people do not read the form first. They start filling it in, they do things, and the message from our texter Helen is, please read the form throughout first before you start filling it in. But another one, I'm waiting for a refund for a passport for the last 9 months. Can't speak to anyone. Web chat is constantly unavailable. I did get on the web chat once and I was told that the refund section had been outsourced. And they could not let me know when I could expect it. Customer service non-existent, so says Ed in Kildare. But on the plus side, Mark in Westmead said, fantastic service online, if used correctly, and people have their information and they follow the correct procedure, it'll work. Did my online renewal last bank holiday Monday at 4:30, 2nd of May, my new passport in the mailbox on the 4th of May. Could not believe it. So when you use it correctly and when you're renewing, it works.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, there's first-time applications have always been the issue because they are effectively a citizenship application. Because the citizenship of the applicant needs to be verified. That means verifying the parents have an entitlement to an Irish citizenship through their child and all the rest of it. So it is a problem, of course, that it takes up to 8 weeks. But as I've said already, you know, the vast majority of adult renewals online are taking 10 days, with 45% of them processed within two. And online child renewals are taking 10 to 15
but
days.
But the problem is the 40% that are being sent back. Indeed. And that means that something is going badly wrong, even with extra staff. Verona, I'll come to you on vacant houses and a tax on vacant houses, which has been proposed by the Housing Committee. What do you think? Is your county awash with vacant premises?
The reality is I don't know, because there isn't a vacant houses register. I think, you know, we have lots of this type of policy being put forward or proposals. And for me, the answer is how many houses is it going to yield into the system? And I think that's the issue we need to ascertain before we do anything. Because if you look at vacant homes, many of them are vacant because they're not livable. And if people are expected to pay a tax, they have to have the option of making them livable. Do they have the money to make them livable? Do we have the builders to carry out those works? There's a lot of things, but I'm not saying whether it would or it wouldn't be effective, because we just don't know. I haven't seen any analysis. I do know that we have multiple schemes for retrofitting that we can't, my office in particular, we can't get them done underway within 6 months because we don't have the builders to carry out the work. Pricing is an issue, getting materials is an issue. So whilst I appreciate it's a proposal, I'm not sure if it would be effective. My strong belief is that the most effective thing we can do to improve the housing situation is to look at our planning policy. And I have put that forward a number of times, both to government and opposition. Nobody is taking cognizance of it. If you look at our SHD process, it failed, and all we yielded was a 20 million bill for judicial reviews with On Board Planola. It failed miserably because simply they didn't follow the law. So we need to look at planning regulation. We need to build a typology of housing that people want. I mean, I'm representing Wexford, as you know, Pat, and I don't believe that everybody in Wexford or many people in Wexford want to live in apartments. But yes, we're seeing a county development plan about to be signed off by councillors in Wexford that says we must build 35 dwellings per hectare. And for that, you get terraced housing and apartments. We need to build a typology, first of all, to accommodate people. You saw that article in the Irish Times by Fiona Redden. It's basically, we seem to be building apartments for cuckoo funds. And nobody wants to buy apartments as their first time home because they're using up their grant. So I think it's a scheme, but it's not one that we've seen any analysis on. Sorry, I should say it's a proposal, but not one with any great analysis.
Okay, Rebecca,
I have to see.
Taxing vacant houses and maybe houses that, well, they're already being taxed. There's a property tax to be paid on them anyway. So this would be double taxation. But often taxing people maybe who can't afford to do the refurbishment that would make them livable.
Absolutely. But in which case they should be then sold and moved on for people who can maybe bring them up to standards. The report on Tuesday had a suite of measures, a couple of carrots and then a stick and a vacant homes tax. And it is where you see long-term dereliction and homes that could be used, and it's often cheaper for people to leave them vacant, or, you know, they don't have the money to bring them up to standard. So another part of it was that we needed real data and analysis on how many vacant units are out there. We have any kind of estimates between 90,000 and 137,000.
How many are on probate? How many are fair deal?
Exactly.
Constricted.
And there has to be reasonable exemptions to vacant property tax for that. So things like probate, things like fair deal, I think there's a reasonable exemption.
But what about the notion of double taxation? Just because no one's living in a house, you tax it more, even though a property tax has already been levelled on it.
We have a very low property tax by international.
No, that's not the point, though.
Yeah, by international comparison.
Two houses next door to each other, one currently vacant being double taxed, and the one next door paying half the tax.
One is used in fulfilling a social good and the other one is left vacant. If you have a look at countries that have done this, right, Vancouver, for example, they started at 1%, then it's 3% and it's gone up to 5% next year. 25% of vacant properties were brought back into use. And dereliction is one part of addressing the housing crisis. It's by no means a solution to it, but it also is sucking the life out of our towns and villages. And you look at areas, particularly along like the West Coast, the Northwest region, there's a particular issue with dereliction there. There are very few rental properties.
It seems to me,
there.
Though, and I go to you on this, Alan, that, you know, chasing individual owners, and I'm thinking of someone who's maybe getting on a bit, can't afford or hasn't got the energy to do a refurb. And meantime, you get SHDs with full planning permission not built. Come on.
Yeah, look, I think this is a legacy issue. It's a legacy that goes back generations, and I think it's something that we actually have a series of policies in place that are working, and they're demonstrably working, and I'll explain why. I mean, if you go back to 2011, you look at the number of vacant properties in the census, it was about 230,000. In 2016, it was 183,000. So there's a 20% reduction. And obviously in April of this year, we did Census 22, and that will hopefully show a further reduction in the number of derelict vacant properties.
I mean, a shortage of housing would encourage anyone who has one to try and get it into the rental market and make a few bob.
But
there must be a reason why people are not doing that.
Well, I think people are making a choice in terms of their property. And it might be the scenario that you've just outlined where the person might be a little bit older and perhaps just not inclined to do it. But there is also many, many other circumstances where a property will become vacant and or disused and abandoned, or even where people might emigrate. There was an awful lot of emigration, of course, over the last decade. But
well,
the scheme
find them to tax them. That's what I would say there. Rebecca?
In my village now, there's a CPO on it now, but one side and half of the side of the village has a line of what could be homes that are lying vacant and derelict. Mm. And in that village, which is 20 minutes from the city centre of Dublin, on a bike and on a bus, you are seeing somewhere that people could be living and they're lying there vacant. They're owned by the one person or the one grouping. There are issues with them. But in the middle of a housing crisis, that is just simply not acceptable. But it's also not acceptable for the visual impact of the village and people who live around them. Like, a vacant home beside you and a derelict home beside you creates an awful lot of problems from your property as well. Damp will seep in, and there'll be structural problems that will have to happen that will impact on neighbours too. So this is part of a number of measures that contained.
But, for example, if you've got noxious weeds in your property and they start spreading next door, you could be fined for that.
So it's very difficult.
But the law is there.
But sometimes it's very difficult to get that owner. And I've had that issue with Japanese knotweeds, that it's been a derelict property and the owner lives abroad and you're not able to get them. And actually the local authority has to go in because it contains such a threat to the rest of the neighbourhood.
But the same will apply to an owner of a derelict property who lives abroad and can't be found. Well, Verona?
One of the other issues is that we say to expand the definition of dereliction, which I think needs to be expanded.
I think, Pat, you hit the nail on the head. You said, you know, in a time of when we are in a serious housing shortage where people could be making lots of money renting vacant properties, there's a good reason why they aren't. The issue here is, would this proposal yield housing into the market? Because we can't keep throwing money at things that don't yield a result.
Well, in Vancouver, it got 25% back involved. And they also do it like extremely well in Amsterdam. There's very little dereliction if you go around.
Here's a very interesting test. Here's an interesting one. We have 13 houses vacant in our village, yet the council just bought houses off the plans in a new housing estate, not even built yet. Many of the 13 houses that are vacant are for sale. Why doesn't the government walk their own walk instead of talking nonsense and taxing?
So the key a response that I would give to that person, and I completely agree, it is frustrating when we see that happen. There's derelict or vacant properties on main streets in every town and village in the country, and we do see local authorities then either building or buying or leasing properties outside
the town
centre. So
at a price,
we have brought
refurb them
as part of Housing for All, as part of the enhanced funding that has been provided to local authorities. There are schemes such as the buy and renew scheme. There's the proposals that have been well made by the housing committee, and indeed my own colleague Emer Higgins and John Cummins produced a report in December of 2021 on this very subject, identifying a number of key priority areas where we as a party in Fine Gael believe that we could support Minister O'Brien and our colleagues in the Greens to actually achieve a reduction in the number of vacant properties.
But
those schemes,
by
those funding
the
and those expertise
why would you
within
buy,
local authorities are
why
now
would
available.
You buy off the plans in an unbuilt housing estate with houses locally that you could buy probably at rock bottom prices?
So some local authorities actually do really well.
Verona?
If I may, I can tell you why. Because it's cost prohibitive for the council to spend money to bring the houses up to standard, because we have such a standard of regulation today. And it brings me back to my point. We've got to go back to basics. We've got to look at planning. Yes, we need standards. But the standards we have, combined with everything else like inflation,
so you're
Brexit,
saying we should lower the standards for
materials. No, I'm not. The standards that are there, you're talking about renting houses in towns. Nobody can afford to do up and bring into the regulatory framework the top of a shop or build an apartment over a shop. It is cost prohibitive, completely.
Can I just say some local authorities do it really well. Waterford does it really well with the repair and leave scheme, and Louth does it really well with the repair and leave scheme. And what they do is they essentially, and what we've asked for is that will be increased, the amount that you can put into it, but it's brought up to a standard and then it's rented back to a local authority for social housing. And so there are examples of where that does work really well. And unfortunately, not all local authorities
We have to leave it there. My thanks to our three guests today on the forum: Verona Murphy, Independent TD for Wexford; Alan Farrell, Fine Gael TD for Fingal; and Rebecca Moyne, and Labour Senator. Thank you all.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.